I was writing down some thoughts the past few days about Ecclesiastes in general, some of the things that Solomon, he kind of experiments. We've kind of talked about this. This is kind of a journey, kind of a journal of his journey, a log of his journey through life. And so he has the time, the resources, the ability, the power to experiment in all kinds of ways. And that's what this book is about, the result of his experiments. One of the things we already saw in the first chapter was how Solomon sees the limitation of human wisdom. Human wisdom is limited. There's only so much that human wisdom can do for us. Solomon realizes that. He sees that in chapter 2 as well. And we kind of see that in almost every single chapter, but we certainly saw it in chapter 1 to a great extent. He stresses that. In chapter 2, we're going to see how Solomon says we need to reflect on life. Reflect on things that are important. Consider what's important. Consider what your life consists of. And kind of looking at it on the flip side, under the sun, you know, just looking at this world and what's in this world apart from God, he asks, is this all there is? Is this all there is? And apart from God, this is all there is. That's it. I mean, this is it right here. You know, you live X number of years and that's it. Apart from God, that's all there is. And so he looks at this in a variety of ways. In chapter 2, he looks at this question from a purely human standpoint. And then we see, I think it's about verse 11 or 12, 11 I think, in this chapter, he gives us a result of some of this experimentation that he's doing. So let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And let's read, let's see, what should we read here to start? The first two verses. Would someone read Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 and 2?
I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it?
Okay, he is kind of proposing a test here. Like I called it an experiment. He says, let's see if laughter or pleasure, mirth, the King James, I think the New King James uses that too, is the answer. Is that the key to life? Laughter and pleasure and mirth, are those the answers to life? So he's proposing a test. Let's test that and see if that's what it's about. What was his answer? What was his answer to that question?
Madness.
It's madness. It's crazy. It's futile. It's vain. It's empty. Remember, he kind of uses all of those synonymously throughout these 12 chapters. He says, if that's what you think is going to give you pleasure, says it won't work. You know, laughter is fine. He's not in any way saying you shouldn't laugh, of course. But he's saying that laughing all the time gets you nowhere. Okay, laughter is not a way to go through life. It's just laughing at everything, not taking anything seriously. He says that's not the answer. That's vanity. You just can't do that. You know, you can't laugh all the time. There is a place to laugh, but you can't laugh all the time. There is more to life than laughter. It's a necessity. It's a small part of life, but there is much more to it than that. There is, he says, he calls laughter madness. He says, you know, what does it accomplish? You know, if you're trying to get a house built, laughing about it won't get the house built. If you're trying to accomplish something in life, laughing your way to the end, that's not the way to accomplish it. It's great to laugh occasionally on the way, but that's not how you accomplish anything. So laughter is not what it's about. So Solomon is like testing this, as I'm going to see if laughing all the time, and he uses the term mirth, if that will do it. Is that going to do it for me? Solomon says, nope, doing that is just madness or insanity. If you've known some people that have become mentally unstable, what do some of them do all the time? Laugh and joke all the time because they're not totally stable. Okay? Solomon says laughing at everything and about everything is really a sign of insanity. Now, not laughing occasionally, again, that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about if that's your whole life, is you just laugh at everything and you think that's somehow going to be the key to life. He's still looking for the key to life. He's testing. He's experimenting, making observations, testing. Is this the key to life? And he says laughter is not the key to life. Laughter doesn't get you anywhere, I guess is one way to put it. And it won't accomplish anything in your life. Anything else about that I wanted to mention? Okay. Let's go to putting on glasses. That's a good idea. All right. Verse 3. Would someone read verse 3 now of this chapter? Oops.
I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, so I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives.
Okay, now what's he experimenting with? Wine, alcohol, right? Just alcohol in general. And of course, to those at that time, wine was the main form of alcohol. But they also had beer at that time. Egyptians had beer, they made beer. But just alcohol in general is what he's talking about. So he says, you know, first thing, I didn't even write verse 3, I just put verse. He says laughter. See, he's trying a whole bunch of things that we might put under the category of pleasure. Pleasurable things. Laughing and joking all the time? That's not it. He comes back to that. I think it's in chapter 7. He comes back to this idea of laughter and frivolity and joking all the time. He addresses that again in chapter 7. But so that was one thing. Now he's trying alcohol. Okay, this is something people have been trying for millennia. All right, this is something, you know, it's not new. People have tried alcohol in general as the key to life, and for some people that's it for them. Okay, they have to have alcohol. It never solves anything, but while they're drinking, it seems to solve it. So for them, they just have to keep drinking then. Because that's the only time they feel like their life has any meaning, so to speak. So they have to keep on drinking. So that's what his, I guess you'd say, experiment was about, was alcohol. It was a pleasure, okay? A form of pleasure. Let's go to Proverbs. We'll just read one verse here. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 1. Would someone read that for us?
Wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise.
Okay. People are deceived by it, right? Okay. Deceives people. So how does alcohol, or just wine, how does it deceive people? You know, there in Proverbs 20, he calls it mocks people. So how does it mock people? How does it deceive people?
Makes them think everything's okay.
That's right. Which is the whole point of Ecclesiastes chapter 2, right? make people think things are good. Okay? So when they go to the bar, they go to wherever, or if they do it at home, you know, they go there and they start drinking because they want to feel good. And they think that's the only answer. See, they're looking for that key that Solomon is talking about in Ecclesiastes. What's the key? Some people think it's got to be alcohol. Okay? And that's all some people will ever try. So it deceives people. It mocks them, right? It mocks people. And how many people who start drinking, you know, they always can say, well, they'll always say, well, I can hold it. I can handle it, right? You know, once I start, I can stop. I don't have any problem. That's usually a very common statement people think. How can anybody ever know when they start drinking that, yeah, I can stop anytime? Most people, I don't think, can do that. Stop anytime they want to. And usually they do what? Instead of stopping, they
get worse.
Because they have to, right? Because it's basically a drug. So they have to have more and more of it to get to that point where they think everything is good. So they have to stay kind of in that state more and more and more. Because that's the only place they think they can find happiness and laughter and so forth. So that's what they do. It's interesting that when Solomon is this verse 3, he includes a verse that, or a phrase that I'm not sure I've ever really paid attention to in verse 3 before. New King James says, I search in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom. Solomon said, here's my experiment. I'm going to try alcohol, but at the same time, I'm going to try to make sure that it doesn't control me. I'm going to try and control it. I'm going to do it wisely. I'm going to be a wise drinker. That's right. That was his test. This was a test. I'm going to see if it's going to work. He says, I'm going to do it with wisdom, not God's wisdom, obviously. Talking about human wisdom. To see if it would work. So it was kind of a controlled experiment. I'm going to see if it's going to work. Will that bring me all the good things in life? Because that's what the commercials make you think. You know? They don't have some guy sitting on a corner drunk living out of a box. That wouldn't sell much. At least I don't think it would. So what do they have? They have people that are in perfect health, perfectly fit, and apparently drinking alcohol makes your teeth white, clears up your skin, does everything all at once. It's a miracle drug. Because that's the kind of people on the commercials, right? That's what they do. And again, especially younger people, will see that, wow, look at those. They're in perfect health and they look great and they're drinking. So, of course, anybody in high school now knows how many people in high school drink. It's just phenomenal how many drink and drink constantly. I don't mean take a drink on the weekend. I mean like drink every day. It's just amazing how many teenagers do that. So it's certainly not just an issue with 20 and 30 and 40-year-olds. It's an issue with much younger people as well. So Solomon said, that's not the place to go. He said, I was going to lay hold and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. So his experiment was, does alcohol take away the pain? Only while you're drinking. If you could stay like drunk your whole life, I guess you wouldn't feel it. But what a waste of a life that would be. So alcohol doesn't take away pain. It just makes things worse. So that didn't work. So he tries something else. Would someone read verse 4? You want to try something different.
I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards.
Okay? Now he's starting to talk about a whole bunch of like building projects that he started, right? What was probably his greatest building project? The temple, right? How many of us know exactly what that looked like? How much of it is left for us to see?
None of it.
None of it. Probably the greatest temple ever made in the history of the world. There's none of it left. Wasn't anything lasting from it. He made great works, you know. It was a magnificent place, but we have no real picture of it. There's nothing that's still lasting from it. It's gone. Nothing. So, and of course, he built other buildings beside that, but that's certainly the one we always think about. Planted myself vineyards. Okay, how many people have been there to see his vineyards? They're not there, are they? Not even not the tiniest bit of evidence of them. All gone. See, now this is his experiment. I'm going to build great works. Great temples, great vineyards. No, they're not there. They're gone. They're gone. Nothing left of them whatsoever. I think it's a great lesson for us about how temporary those things are. You know, that's why we're not supposed to lay up treasures on earth, right? For that very reason. Thieves can get in and steal, and I'm sure, and of course, part of Solomon's stuff was stolen, right? Later years after the kingdom was divided, some of the stuff was taken. But also, you know, just over time, it goes downhill. It's destroyed. Great lesson. Okay. what about verse 5? Would someone read that now?
I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit.
Okay. Some more of these projects is another word. That was real common back then. Kings would kind of try and outdo one another to have the greatest gardens known. You know, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon was one of those ancient wonders of the world. None of those things are still here. None of those gardens are around. Nothing whatsoever. But yet Solomon put a tremendous amount of effort into them. Lots of money and lots of time. And there's nothing left of them. So how can, and this is what he wants to get across, how can those things that are so temporary, how can they even start to bring us real happiness? How can those things be the key to life? Well, they can't be. So Solomon is telling us here that these experiments are all failing. You can't laugh yourself through life. You can't drink yourself through life. You can't build great works through life thinking that that's what it's all about. He says it's not. He does the same thing in verse 6. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. Well, he needed, you know, places to irrigate or ways to irrigate all the things. Notice how the word myself shows up all the time. I made myself. I made myself. I made myself. See, it was all about him. You know, this was the experiment. I made these things not for other people. I made them for me. Made the temple, I made these houses, I made the gardens, the vineyards, I made it all for me. Doesn't work. Doesn't work. Talks about that all the time. I think it's probably something that can still be, you know, a problem for us. But just think about some of the magnificent buildings that were made even in the 1800s that are gone. You know, that's just less than 200 years ago. They didn't even last that long. And when they were built, they were magnificent. Yes,
Dan. Even today, the people with wealth and so-called wisdom that live in extravagant homes and stuff like that, they're drawing all their attention to themselves And they want to be the center of the attention instead of God being the center of the attention.
Yeah. Just that myself thing, right? Myself, myself. That's what happened in Luke chapter 12, right? Let's go to Luke chapter 12 for just a moment and read something. This will be familiar to you, but Luke chapter 12, and beginning in verse 15. Luke 12, beginning in verse 15. Jesus said, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." That's kind of what Solomon was saying. And then, of course, this is a parable about the rich man that yielded just huge amounts. He didn't have room to store them, so he says, "I know what I'm going to do. I'll tear those things down. They're not big enough. I'll build new ones that are bigger. And then I can sit back and eat, drink, and be merry." I remember when we went to New York this past December. When you go downtown in the lower part of Manhattan, our guide kept pointing out, okay, in 1901, this was the tallest building in the world. And then 3 weeks later, this was the tallest building in the world. And then a year later, this was the tallest building in the world. They just kept trying to outdo one another. And there was one that was the tallest building in the world for, I think it was like a day. That was it. It was the tallest building in the world for one day. Because there was the two, he told us, the two millionaire people who were putting these up, and they were racing. They were racing. See who could build the biggest and so forth. And one guy had it for one whole day. Well, that was a big deal, wasn't it? So that's what, you know, Solomon is saying the same thing. Those things don't last. Someone's always going to build something bigger or better or whatever. Right, and back down to verse 7. "I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me." So now he talks about all the servants that he had. Well, considering everything that he owned, it would take thousands of people every day to just take care of what he had. Herds and flocks. Verse 8, "I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kind." He's still experimenting. Well, maybe if I have the biggest flocks in the world, if I have the best singers, the best people to play instruments, if I have the best and the most, maybe that will bring me real happiness. That's his experiment. "So I became great." And I don't think he's boasting here. This is just a plain old fact. He did become great and excel more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. He had more stuff and owned more things and had more great works than anybody who had ever lived there and ruled from Jerusalem. Wasn't anybody even close, actually. He said, "Also, my wisdom remained with me." And remember, of course, that came from God earlier. So here's his results of all this stuff, the next two verses. "Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them." So nobody today can say that they're trying something new or greater. Because Solomon said, "I did it all. I tried everything. Every type of pleasure you could think of." And he said, "I did it to a greater extent than anybody will ever be able to do." That's why this test, this experiment, is so important. Because no one could ever surpass it. "For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor." Then, here's the result of it. "Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun." There was no profit apart from God. There was no profit looking at this on the earth. There was no profit in doing this for myself. There was no profit to it. Grasping for wind, put your hand out, grasp the wind, you open it up, and you have absolutely nothing. And that's what Solomon said was the result of his experiment. There was his hypothesis. Pleasure will bring me happiness. Pleasure is the key to life. And so he went through his experiment. He tried it all. Tried it every way imaginable. He tried it with laughter and alcohol and great projects and owning slaves. All of these things. He says, I tried it all and it was all futile. It basically said it was a waste of time. But of course, this is left for us so no one else will ever have to do it. No one else will ever have to think, okay, laughing my way through life is the way to go. Solomon said, no, I've already done it, so you're wasting your time. Stop. Alcohol is going to be my answer. Solomon says, don't. I already tried it. Doesn't work, so don't start it. So Solomon's already done the experiment. He already knows the results. So don't keep doing the same experiment over and over and over again. That's what he says. Because you're not going to get a different result. It's going to be exactly the same thing. But not too many people listen to him. I mean, very few. People still are trying. People are still trying to laugh their way through life. People are still trying to drink their way through life. They're still trying to build magnificent things for themselves, to amass enormous amounts, and nothing. And they look at all these things and then they're temporary. Look at our economy. I was reading about China. This is really depressing. China, and we think about how bad it is here with our economy. China, just like, what was the date? This was on Fox News. So it was a couple days ago. China now has lost 20 million jobs. I'll repeat that. 20 million jobs. They have closed, this just blew me away, 70,000 factories during this past year when we all through. 70,000. The article was stressing the peasants who had left the country, rural life, to go into the big cities and the factories where they could earn several times more, now are having to move back out of the city back to the land. 20 million jobs. I mean, that's basically 20 million people who are having to leave the cities and go back. I saw a picture of one of the port cities that back in the 80s was a little fishing village, had some boats there. And if you look at it now, it looks like New York City. This was a little fishing village. And they built all these factories, and now they're losing them. I mean, they're all going back. They put their trust in the wrong things. See, they put their trust in those factories and people continuing to buy. Well, that lasted for a while, and it was gone. See, that's what Solomon is saying. Don't put your trust in those things because they're fleeting. Just like grasping for wind, and then they're gone, and you have nothing. See, that's what those peasants have now, nothing. What they earned, or what they'd made, they'd had to spend, and so they basically have nothing now for all their trouble.
Bobby?
Yes?
There was something on Fox today that kind of interesting. Of course, it doesn't apply to too many people around here, but people who have accumulated a vast amount of wealth and die, now the government, I think it's over 3 million, if you've got $3 million,
mm-hmm,
and you pass away, the inheritance tax that would go to your offspring, 45% of that now is going to go to the government.
Yeah, I better get home and get my $3 million taken care of real quick. I have it in several different places, actually. So.
Oh, they told on radio today, too. If you had a job, you better stay with it.
I've got a job.
I'm
retired.
Stay with it.
I'm
no, that's what it said.
Isn't it amazing what Solomon said 2,500 years ago? And that's what people need to listen to today. That's exactly what they need to listen to. Most people won't, but you know, we don't have an excuse because we know what it says. And we know that alcohol is not the answer. Laughing all the time is not the answer. More and more possessions. None of those things are the answer. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
And how unhappy she was.
Mm-hmm.
It was really pitiful.
She was
a miserable
person. Yeah.
So money definitely.
Oh, I remember you read much about Howard Hughes' life. You know, he was one of the richest men at the time. My, what a horrible, especially the end of his life. That was just horrible.
You better let that $3 million.
I'm going to go, yeah, I better start giving it away. That's what I mean. That's what God wants me to do with it, right? Is to get rid of it. That's true. Well, you can probably tell we've been talking about the key to life. Is this life all there is? Remember, Jesus asked a question, you know, what if you gain the whole world? Which is almost what Solomon had. What if you gain the whole world, but while doing that, you lose your own soul? You know, what will you give in exchange for your soul? Some people give alcohol in exchange for their soul. Some people will give their job in exchange for their soul because they want more and more and more. They want to be it. And you just list all these things, all these pleasures that Solomon tried. And Solomon said, none of them are worth losing your soul over. None of them whatsoever. Because your soul is the most important thing you have. You know, our life, like Jesus said, we read in here, it's not about what you possess. It doesn't consist of your abundance, of what you possess. It says your soul is the most important thing you have, so that's what you have to take care of. I mean, aren't we concerned about, you know, of our physical things? We're concerned about what's the most valuable, and that's what we protect. Well, Jesus says you need to be protecting your soul. And by protecting, first of all, he means cleansing it, having it purified in baptism, and then keeping it pure. You know, keeping that repentant life where you're always ready to ask for forgiveness, to pray to God to be forgiven. Because he says what you have, that soul, is the most important possession you have because it's the thing that you possess that won't be left in this world. It will go on with you throughout eternity. And that's why it's the most important possession we have. Tonight is... David leads us in this invitation song, if you desire to be baptized, to confess wrongs, to ask for prayers, we ask you to come as we stand and sing.